Chances are, if you live in Wisconsin, you are either a deer hunter or you know one. There got to be one in the family or friend or relative or somebody nearby anyway. Whether you're a hunter or not, you probably get a thrill when you see deer grazing in a field or maybe through the trees in a wooded area. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. There's no doubt that as a nation, we have a fascination with deer. And we have about 30 million of them, as a matter of fact. That's a lot of deer to go around, and that has a very significant impact on our environment, on our economy, and even on our health. Al Cambrone is a writer for Canoe and Kayak, Cooking Wild Deer and Deer Hunting magazine. He's author of the book we're going to talk about today. It's called Deerland, America's Hunt for Ecological Balance and the Essence of Wildness. He joins us today from our WPR studios in Superior. Al, welcome to the program. Thanks for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Certainly, certainly.
I really enjoyed your book, by the way.
Great, great. Glad to hear it.
It was a fascinating book, and you know, I've been sort of studying deer and talking about deer for years and years and years. I feel like I know quite a bit, but I managed to learn quite a few things from your book as well.
I learned a lot researching it too. I tell you,
I bet you did. But let's talk. You focus on whitetail.
Yes.
Mentioned we have 30 million deer in the U.S., but frankly, the biggest percentage of those are whitetail, are they not?
That's right. Of those 30 million, about 25 million are whitetail. And beyond that, you know, the places with the most deer, the most whitetail deer, are also the places with the most people, where deer and people come together. And sometimes harmoniously, sometimes not.
Yeah. And of course, you've been looking at deer for a long time, too. But how did you happen to decide to write this book?
Well, like a lot of people, I was fascinated with deer. I began to notice that some people are maybe a little too fascinated with deer, almost to the point of obsession. So I thought that would make for an interesting story. On the other hand, a lot of people take deer for granted, don't even notice them. But deer play a way bigger role in our environment and in American culture than most people realize. So I wanted to tell that story, too.
And we have, just thinking about the economic impact of deer, in a white-tailed deer in this country, it's enormous.
It is. Even though a relatively small percentage of Americans hunt, maybe about 6% of our adult population, it accounts for about $34 billion economic activity. And most of that hunting is deer hunting.
And so it's rifles, it's ammunition, it's the impact on communities.
Yes, tourism, and just the money hunters spend on their licenses. But then a lot of things that aren't included in that $34 billion, things we don't think of, like real estate. Here in northern Wisconsin, that's one of the biggest drivers of the rural real estate market, people looking for hunting land.
Yeah, you have a really interesting story, a chapter about Buffalo County, and we'll get to that in a minute, but maybe you can tell our listeners how you have your book organized.
Well, I've split it into two parts. Part one, love and obsession, and part two, consequences. Because, you know, it's great to have all those deer, and deer hunters want to see more deer. People who don't hunt, who just like to watch wildlife, they want to see more deer. And as you mentioned, we now have about 30 million deer in the U.S., 100 times more than a century ago. And having all those deer, it's a wonderful thing, but it does have consequences.
We'll talk about some of those consequences with our guest today, Al Cambrone. Cambrone is author of Deerland, America's Hunt for Ecological Balance and the Essence of Wildness. You can join in with your questions. How aware are you of the deer population around you? How do you interact with it, either on purpose or unintentionally? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post a question or comment there at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. Katie and Cable is up with a comment. Katie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
Hello, Katie.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, I am a naturalist at the Cable Natural History Museum up here in Cable, Wisconsin, and we are just opening up an exhibit. We're open to the public now about the white-tailed deer in Wisconsin, and the title of the exhibit is Deer Camp. It's about the natural and cultural history of white-tailed deer in Wisconsin.
So, and that's at Cable?
Yes.
Great.
And so that's open, and how long is it going to be open?
It's going to be open for a year, so it'll be up through mid-April of 2014.
Okay, well, we'll be driving through Cable. I'll be on my way north through Cable. At some point, we're going to have to stop and take a look. Thank you, Katie, for calling. I appreciate it. And that's one of the, actually, the Cable, it's at the Cable Natural History Museum, I believe you said, right, Katie?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Okay, maybe we'll post that up on our Facebook page so we give you a link.
Yeah, it's going to have a lot of information about how white-tailed deer and people have interacted in Wisconsin.
Well, that's the Al, you're going to have to get over there and take a look at that.
I think so.
Because that's certainly what you're trying to get at, too, is sort of our relationship with deer. What do you find that deer represent in our psyche?
Well, that's a great question. You know, they represent more to us than just meat or antlers. It's something deeper. In my subtitle of my book, I use the phrase, the essence of wildness. And I think that really describes it. It's part of our archetypal wilderness experience we're looking for, or at least an experience being out in the country. You'll notice, for example, many suburban housing developments have deer in their name, like Deer Estates or Deer Path or Deer Run. People will spend more on that place out in the suburbs. They'll commute farther so they can live where at least they imagine there are also deer. Maybe there aren't. Maybe there are a few, and maybe there are way too many.
Yeah, the way too many is something that you deal with in the book, too. Dee and Amory, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. We moved up here in 79, and we developed a deer route because we were just enthralled with the deer. We developed a deer route where we could drive at night, and we could watch them feed, sometimes as many as 50 in a field.
Wow.
But all those fields now, people have built in them, and so they're not there anymore. But in... just to take over the place. I have five of them that are in my yard on most occasions, and they're not the least bit afraid. All they do is step off my driveway and let me drive out. So they're getting very, very tame.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And when you try to shoo them away, do they go very far?
No. In fact, they're not even afraid of my car. I drive a big car. They're not even afraid of my car. And they also have... decided that they own the apple tree in my neighbor's yard, and so they stand on their back feet and eat apples off the top of that tree.
Oh, that must be fun to watch for you, if not for your neighbor.
It is really fun. And then they also bring their babies with them, so occasionally, you know, you got to stop on the road because one goes by, you know there's going to be several following.
Yep.
But I'm still enthralled with them. I don't think I would bother them, but I'm still enthralled with them.
Yeah. And I thank you very much, Dee, for calling. And I'm sure, you know, probably more the majority of people kind of feel the way Dee does, although you can get to be, as you write about in your book, it gets to be too much of a good thing in some urban areas.
It can. You know, and... it sounds like it's almost getting that way in Dee's neighborhood. It's probably fun for her to watch the deer go after those apple trees, but maybe not her neighbor. And now she has five deer standing around in her yard. I talked with one homeowner in Duluth, Minnesota. They often have about 15 or 16 standing around in their yard, not wanting to leave. And sometimes there can be more car crashes and that sort of thing, and eventually, it can be too much of a good thing.
Well, if you look, and of course, people call a lot this program, especially like on Garden Talk or sometimes mm-hmm. on our Wednesday programs, and say, the deer are eating up every single, you know, plant in my garden, or they're trimming their leveling my trees, or at least they're chewing as high up as they can reach. And so and that not only extends to homeowners, but if you go out in the woods and areas where deer exist, which is pretty much anywhere in the state,
right,
they have this
everywhere.
Huge impact on the quality of the woods.
They do, and I think this is really an undertold story. People don't realize what's going on, and it's because I suppose you can't really look out in the woods and easily see what's not there. We literally don't know what we're missing. But here's what you can look for. If you walk out in the woods, first look down, then look up. If you look down and you see an open park-like area with very little underbrush, that's probably because the deer ate it. They'll eat away the understory. There won't be much left there to provide cover for other animals and birds. And all that will grow is plants deer don't like ferns and certain other sorts of plants. And so that can make it tough for other wildlife. Then look up, and you might see what's called a browse line. As high as those deer can reach, Dee talked about how they are standing up on their hind legs to reach those apples. As high as those deer can reach on their hind legs if they're hungry, there will be a neatly trimmed line. It looks like somebody was out there with hedge trimmers, but it wasn't humans. It was deer.
Yeah, an unbelievable thing. And I'm telling you, I've had a chance to see what are called exclosures in woods and even in fields.
Yes.
And you might describe those for people.
Sure. That's a technique that botanists and ecologists use to really see what's happening. It's an odd word, an exclosure. If an enclosure keeps deer in, an exclosure keeps them out. What we can do is build a little fence around a small area. It might only be 10 feet on a side, or it might be 100 feet on a side. But you fence out the deer and then wait. Watch. Pretty soon, what's inside the fence will look very different from what's on the outside. You'll be able to see deer on the left, no deer on the right. On the inside, you've got lush, thick underbrush. On the outside, it's still mown and looks like a park.
And it's an amazing way to look at it. I've seen it in some farm fields, too, in alfalfa fields, where there's a little exclosure. And literally, the crop or whatever it is, you know, a foot higher in the exclosure than it is outside.
Right, right. Every night, the deer are tiptoeing out into those fields and getting their fill of alfalfa. And that's a little bit hard to measure. It's an invisible loss. It really affects those farmers and their bottom line. And that exclosure is one of the techniques that can be used to really measure that damage.
Al Cambrone, our guest today, he is the author of Deerland, America's Hunt for Ecological Balance and the Essence of Wildness. He joins us today from our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Superior. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Talking about deer today, white-tailed deer, with our guest, Al Cambrone, who is the author of the book Deerland, America's Hunt for Ecological Balance and the Essence of Wildness. Great to have him along. Thank you for listening in. What do you think about our deer, our population, and how do they relate to you? How do the deer in your community, or how do you relate to them? The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And I should mention, we have an email from Mary in Manitowish who says, just want to let you know that there's a program titled The Private Life of Deer on the PBS show Nature tonight. So two of Wisconsin's residents will be on the show in the segment on white-tailed deer. They will be interviewing photographer Jeff Richter and naturalist John Bates. both have been guests on this program more than once. Jeff published a book titled White Deer, Ghosts of the Forest in 2007. There's some stunning images by Jeff and text by John. We put that up, Judith put that up on our Facebook page as well. So something else to turn on tonight. Al?
Yes. I've been hearing rumors about that show for a while, and I'm really curious about it. Yeah. I'm going to be watching it.
Yeah, I will too. It sounds like a great show, something we certainly need to pay attention to in this state, because you as a matter of fact, there's so many ways that deer affect us and affect our communities, and you talk about that a lot. One of the chapters that I resonated to was the chapter on community and on meat. My dad was a meat cutter.
Oh, really?
And I worked for a local community slaughterhouse, and so they dealt with hundreds and hundreds of deer every year, and had big, and I helped out in some of those some of those times. So I know the economic impact just to that business.
Yes, and I bet this was true of your family's business. It's true of a lot of small-town butcher shops all across America, that they get an extra boost every fall when deer season comes along. A lot of overtime, some long hours, but also it really helps their bottom line.
Yeah, and it's so, and you think about the small communities across Wisconsin, the impact, the economic impact, well, not only here, but across the country, the economic impact of deer in a very positive sense.
Indeed.
Bob in Mount Horeb, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Hi.
Yeah, I really appreciate your providing a balanced perspective on the deer problem in Wisconsin. And the problem is that we love them a lot, but the deer also love our native plants and are really disturbing our ecology. I'm a ornamental plant grower in rural Dane County, and I lose thousands and thousands of dollars of plant material every year to the deer.
You fed a lot of deer then?
It doesn't take much damage to make a plant unsalable. So one rub from a buck destroys a tree that I've been growing for 5 or 6 years.
Oh, no.
So it annoys me when I hear the hunter saying that there aren't enough deer in the woods to be able to enjoy hunting, because that's certainly not my experience.
Yeah. Interesting. So I had understood when you first described that they were getting these plants after you'd sold them and they were out in your customer's backyard, but they're hitting the nursery.
They're hitting the nursery before they get to the customers, unfortunately.
Right, and that's an economic loss for me.
Yeah, and thanks a lot for calling, Bob. Maybe, Al, you can talk about that aspect of the deer and their impact, negative impact on our economy.
Yes, there's that too. They have a huge impact on agriculture and also on forestry. Sometimes it's a fine line between those two. Some forests are plantings of rows of trees grown just like corn. But either way, deer, to begin with the trees, they love those tender, tasty seedlings. When they're very small, it looks like a different plant, and it has a different texture and flavor for those deer. They'll just literally nip them in the bud, and then they're gone. They also seem to prefer a nursery stock, whether it's seedlings being planted out in the forest or whether it's something like the ornamental trees Bob was talking about. They can almost sense that those small plants that have just come from the nursery have a better flavor and they're more nutritious. And maybe they were better fertilized, better watered, and somehow the deer can tell the difference.
And in as you point out in your book, and you talk a little bit about the experiences in some areas, even in urban areas we're talking about here, where the deer have gotten to the point where actually they're being hunted right in the urban areas.
Yes, yes. And that's a little bit controversial. Some people would rather see us using birth control for deer. But that doesn't work too well for a variety of reasons, and there are really no easy answers. So in many suburbs and even cities, we have urban hunts going on, either highly structured bow hunts or else paid sharpshooters coming in at night.
And this is and obviously this has been a controversial thing for a lot of people.
It is, it is. You know, a lot of people hate to see those deer harmed, but as one ecologist told me, you know, just because we're not shooting them doesn't mean we're not killing them. And just because we're not shooting them doesn't mean they're not suffering. If those deer are starving because they've eaten all the vegetation that's available, including the shrubs, but also the native vegetation that's maybe in the parks and greenways within that suburb, then those deer are going to be suffering, and that may not be the most humane solution.
Jan in Wisconsin Rapids, thank you very much for calling. Hi.
Hi there. Say, I've got a little custom frame shop here, and over a few years back, I framed a piece with multiple pictures of these old brown tone pictures from deer hunting camps. And they were all taken in the Rothschild area by Wausau.
Mm-hmm.
And taken in 1938. And I've got a Kochman's department store receipt here in the shadow box that has date on it, so I know where it's been dated. But if you notice all these pictures, they're in wall tents, big camp, deer camps, and it's all clear cut all around. Everything is totally clear cut.
Yes.
Which means what you see outside of Wausau today, you know, the big maple stands are, you know, second, third growth. So the deer were really thick in there, and there was all kinds of browse, which you had mentioned, and these pictures really show that to a full effect. And the other thing I wanted to mention was that deer are absolutely huge. They're scary big.
Yeah.
Wow.
People that come in now, and they complain because their family deer camps don't have any deer anymore. And they blame the DNR sometimes, and they rant and rave, but it's really because the deer have just simply moved on because the forest has changed. And the deer move with the forests.
Well, and the deer have changed the forests, Al.
Yes, that's right. It works both ways. The deer have changed the forests. They've had a huge ecological impact. And yet what Jan says is true, too. Sometimes the habitat changes and the deer move on. We had a huge wave of deer over a century ago when we had what was called the big cutover all across northern Wisconsin. When we leveled the forest during a short period of just a decade or two, then there was all this new growth. We had lots and lots of deer. Then those deer were hunted and pretty much gone, and now we're back. We have higher deer populations again. But the habitat has changed. Sometimes that happens on a smaller scale. Some hunter might complain of no deer at my deer stand. I've hunted that same spot for 20 years. There used to be lots of deer there. Where did they go? And it could be that the forest has grown up, the habitat has changed. Maybe that hunter needs to find a new spot.
It's just that for the heck of it, the receipt here from the department store shows 10 pounds of sugar was 55 cents.
Wow.
Oh, man. Thanks, Jan. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Rodney in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Rod.
Hey, I live in a residential area in Eau Claire. Our backyard abuts the university woods, and they're not killing the deer, obviously. We've got sometimes 12, 14 deer in our backyard, and we planted a couple trees. They, like you were talking, they ate them, and then they knocked them down. Plants. My wife can't grow any plants because they eat them all. So what is there as a solution to keep the deer away?
Wow. I don't have any easy answers for you. If you have a garden that you'd consider fencing in, like if it's a vegetable garden or some part of your ornamental gardens, flower gardens that you could fence in.
We're talking about regular plants. We're talking about regular plants, hostas and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, they love hostas. To them, hostas are like candy, and that's almost hopeless. It's really tough. There are some solutions people recommend. You can use some sort of scent-based solution. Some people will get predator urine from the zoo, or they'll use soap, other kinds of scents, blood meal. And those work a little bit, but deer might step over and around it. In the first rain, that'll be washed away. So I'm afraid I don't have any easy answers for you there.
One thing that has worked is electric fencing.
Yes.
Which you can put a fence right around your property, and you can actually have a solar battery just doing the electrifying. And once they touch their nose to one of those wires, they tend not to want to come back. So that's something that you could... I know has been successful in...
Would that work for you, Rodney, in your situation?
No, they jump right over it. We have a fence. It's not, I don't know, it's probably about 4 or 5 feet, and they just jump right over it.
Yeah, deer are pretty athletic. They can jump right over a fence that would keep cattle out, for example. Truly deer-proof fence needs to be about 8 feet tall. If you have one around your garden that's 6 feet tall, especially if they can't get a running start, that might be okay, but you need a tall fence.
Yeah, unfortunately. I wish we had better answers for you, Rod. And, well, it's just one of the issues you talk about in your book, Al. It's just something really problematic for a lot of people. Gene and Gordon has something, too, that you also discussed. Gene, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, I have a way to prevent collisions with deer at night.
Uh-huh.
They're mesmerized by your headlights. So if you flick your lights up and down, the brights and dims, that will break their trance and their approach to the light. They just go for the car lights.
So if you see one... If you happen to see one with enough time, you blink your lights, you're saying that...
You'll see them by the edge of the road. And they will walk right in or jump right into your car because they're mesmerized by those lights.
Yeah.
I think that sounds like a great idea. I've never tried that. I'm going to try that next time I see a deer at night.
Actually, that the one chapter that you have in your book is called... the deadliest animal in North America, and you claim the deer is the deadliest animal in North America.
Well, actually it is, if you count car crashes at least. They won't usually attack us in our homes or offices. But, you know, people fear the wrong things. We're worried about wolves or grizzlies or sharks, rattlesnakes. Instead, we really should fear deer. Every year they account for about 150 human fatalities, lots more injuries, and millions of dollars in car repairs, and they are the deadliest animal in North America.
Gene, thanks again for calling. I want to give Steve and Madison a chance. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, my buddy is just starting an organic apple orchard up in the forest, and we were talking about the same thing, and my thoughts are is, you know, Aldo Leopold, one showed is, you know, they used to hunt the wolves and deer population got big, and so then they started leaving the wolves alone. Well, why don't we learn from history and leave the wolves alone? Why did they make it legal to hunt them again? Just want to see your thoughts on that.
Well, that's a good question, and that's another very controversial issue. Personally, I'm a hunter. I hunt deer. I am not interested in hunting wolves. I don't think they'd be as tasty as venison. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a big reason why we do have so many deer now. From much of the American landscape, we've eliminated wolves, coyotes, other predators, And so deer have it pretty good.
You know, I wanted to get back to your book, Al, because you have an incredible quote by Aldo Leopold. And it was, let's see if I've got, just as a deer herd lives in mortal fear of wolves, so does a mountain live in mortal fear of its deer. And perhaps with better cause, for while a buck pulled down by wolves can be replaced in 2 or 3 years, a range pulled down by too many deer may fail of replacement in as many decades.
Yes. I love that quote because it really tells that story. In fact, I used that to begin that chapter about the environmental impacts of deer and really begin that whole second part of the book about consequences. And the title of that chapter is Why the Mountain Fears Its Deer. Leopold was talking in Western mountain terms, mountains and ranges, because he'd been living out west, even though he's from Wisconsin like us. But a forest fears its deer, too, at least metaphorically.
Tom, and thanks again, Steve, for calling. Appreciate it very much. Tom in Land of the Lakes, on to you. Hi, Tom. Tom, are you there?
Oh, maybe we lost you.
Maybe we lost Tom. Stella, let's go to you next in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Stella.
Hi. Excuse me. I have a couple. I have two suggestions for the gentleman who called just before me about deer and infesting his backyard.
Yeah.
The first suggestion is a product. It's called a scarecrow, and what it is it's a motion sensor water sprayer that you hook up to a garden hose, and yep. It's on a stake. You push it into the ground, and when it senses motion, then it makes a noise. It goes, and it makes an arc of, it sprays about a 90-degree arc or a 180-degree arc.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very effective. People we know had live in a deer-infested area, and they could not grow anything in their yards. They put one at each end of their house, and that year they had hostas and all of their other plants. And the night that they took them out in the fall because of freezing,
yep.
Everything disappeared.
Oh, no.
And the other suggestion is deer are very good high jumpers, but they're not good broad jumpers.
Yeah.
And so an idea that I saw in Mother Earth years ago is to put a double fence about, 5 or 6 feet high, but mm-hmm. 5 feet apart. So yep. You put two lines of fencing, and they can jump into it, but they can't jump out of it because they have to do a standing. They have to do a standing high jump, and they need a running start. So that will keep them out of the yard as well. If yeah. You just have two fences that are 5 feet apart.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And
a lot of fencing, but it's effective.
Stella, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. I'm telling you, we try that has worked. Others have told me that. That scarecrow with the noise and the water,
yeah,
can work. Well, obviously there's another thing that can work really well, and that is a dog.
Yes.
If you got a dog and you can keep the dog can be outside most of the time, or in the evening at least, you're going to have a lot fewer problems, depending on the dog.
Right, right. And depending on the deer, yeah, how aggressive they are, they may chase the dog off, but let's hope the dog can take care of that, yeah.
Yeah. And Joe in Monona, hello to you.
Well, I just had to call you and tell you about my fun experience was opening the windows facing my backyard and what was back there, but 5 deer in my Monona backyard, which is fenced in, but it's not a very high fence, maybe about 4 or 5 feet. And they just looked at me, and I looked at them, and one by one, they just glided over my fence. It was so much fun.
Wow.
It was so much fun watching them, how they, it was just beautiful watching them jump over my fence. I wish they would have stayed longer. I'd have grabbed my camera, but I didn't have time.
Well, don't worry. They'll be back.
Yeah. You might get a little tired of them, Joe, after a while.
But But in Monona, we're all houses out here. I don't know where they came from.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I lived in Monona for quite a few, 12 years, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
I called my hunter neighbor. I was so excited I could hardly speak, and he's very casually, he says, yeah, we've got them around here.
Wow.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, you refer to America's hunt for ecological balance and the essence of wildness. What did you find?
Well, wildness meant different things to different people. And some people, when they went hunting or when they wanted to see deer, they were looking for a real natural, almost a wilderness sort of experience. But other people, whether they were hunting or watching deer, they were ready to take a few shortcuts, and they didn't need to feel like they were out in the wilderness. One of my chapters I call Feeders, Baiters, and Plotters. Three things that are different, but fundamentally
the same.
Similar. Yeah. Some people like to feed deer recreationally. And sometimes that can do more harm than good. It may not be the best thing for the deer in the long run, but people love to feed deer. Some people like to hunt deer over bait. Used to be that was not very common. Hunting culture has changed so that many people see that as very acceptable and an ordinary way to hunt a deer now, to put a pile of corn out in the woods. Other people see that as a shortcut that's not really sporting. The third thing, plotting, has to do with what hunters call food plots. They'll make a small field, not a big farm field, but just a little plot that might be 10 feet across, 100 feet across. They plant it with plants specially chosen to please the palates of deer. They want to lure in deer. And they'll watch them all summer, early fall, but come hunting season, they'll be harvesting those deer. Is the deer harvest their very last mouthful? So feeders, baiters, and plotters, all those people want to see more deer. To do that, they're ready to kind of manipulate the habits and even the diet of deer in a way that isn't totally natural.
Well, fascinating story, Al, and fascinating book. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
It was great to be able to talk with you. Al Cambrone, writer for lots of magazines, Canoe and Kayak, Cooking Wild, Deer and Deer Hunting, and has this book out, Deer Land, America's Hunt for Ecological Balance and the Essence of Wildness. He joined us today from our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Superior. Always amazing to learn how one species can have such an impact on our environment. Coming up next, we'll talk about how one type of environment can have an impact on many species. Katie Balfus from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association here to talk about American Wetlands Month and how we can protect those amazing habitats. So stay with us right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.